Welcome to the Generous Business Owner Podcast, where business owners gain inspiration and encouragement to live a legacy, not just leave one. And now your hosts, Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's Generous Business Owner Podcast. My name's Jeff Thomas, and I've got my co-host, Jeff Rutt, with me. Say hello to the people, Jeff.
Hello to the people.
Yes. And we were just having a little off-camera discussion about Ukraine. We see the Ukraine flag behind Jeff Rutt. He is a big supporter there, and we all support them. So just a little shout-out to Ukraine. But we have a very special guest with us today. Bo Parfet is with us. He's a managing principal at DLP Capital, but he's got a million great stories we can't wait to get to. He has authored four books that all kind of center around, you know, his adventures, mountain climbing included, and his love for improving the world. So we'll kind of get to how those two things tie in over time. But Bo, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here. Let's have some fun, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, let's have some fun. But yes. let's kind of get the groundwork started with the, I'm going to give you a clean slate, full opportunity. Just tell us what it was like in the, for Bo growing up as a child. What was the family formation like, your spiritual walk, there's usually we find just about every one of our guests did something illegal during junior high in the entrepreneurial space. But just share whatever comes to mind in, you know, during those early years for Bo.
Yeah, you bet. So grew up in the Midwest. For any listeners out there that grew up in the Midwest. Yeah, and my dad used to always say, you know, you're from the Midwest? Wow. Well, you don't have to be hungry to eat. Yeah. You know, you have dessert with every meal.
Exactly.
So I grew up, grew up in the Midwest. My parents, you know, I think I was lucky enough to be surrounded by, you know, friends and family. I did have some struggles early on, and those were, I was dyslexic. You know, I was really struggling to learn how to read, and it was challenging. And I remember going to school every day, kind of having the hot sweats, like, man, I just can't figure this out, you know? And I also had a speech impediment. I struggled with saying my R's and S's. So here I had this speech impediment. Hey, I was dyslexic, and, you know, I didn't know what, you know, didn't know what was happening. And then my parents got divorced. And if they were on this podcast, they'd probably tell you, you know what, we didn't do that. We didn't handle it the best way. Mm-hmm. So I had kind of that confluence of things. And I remember in second grade, my second grade teacher told me in a parent teacher conference, hey, Bo's never going to graduate high school.
Wow.
And I'd love to tell you guys, I went home that night and said, hey, I'm going to prove him wrong. Well, that's not what happened. I went home that night and I cried my eyes out because I literally, you know, in second grade, you think something is wrong with me.
Right.
Like I have, you know, really something's permanently wrong with me. And so for like years, I just struggled with that and I just kept grinding it out. And I was like, what else am I going to do? And then in seventh grade, my seventh grade parent teacher conference, my seventh grade teacher said, I got good news. Bo's going to graduate high school, but not college. I was like, oh, man.
Progress.
Yeah. You know, hey, a little progress. So I just kept kind of grinding. I didn't know what else to do. And I just kept grinding away. I started to get really practice math. I was getting good at math and I was getting good at sports. Kind of use that as a foundation to grow. And then I ended up going to college and getting two master's degrees and figuring out how I learn. So for those of you that have dyslexic kids or learning disability, don't worry if the traditional school method works, because there's about 30 or 40 different ways a human being absorbs information. And you just have to figure out how do you do it?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the magic. And then, you know, to share a little bit about my faith, I grew up Catholic. And I had some ups and downs with my faith as kind of a youngster. And because I would, you know, read the Bible, you know, small group, Sunday school, and I would read these amazing stories and meet amazing people. And every so often I would have like, there'd be a mean adult. Okay. Again, this is from a kid's perspective. I'd have that mean adult. Okay. And, mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, how can they, if they're saying they're Catholic and, but yet they're so mean to me and other kids, like what, it doesn't make any sense to me. Why would God allow that to happen? And I just kind of went through a wave up and down. And I just, as time went on, I realized, you know what, we're all flawed. And, you know, if people are, some people are just different than others. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit about my childhood. I have a lot of siblings as well. And
yeah.
I'll hit the pause button there. How was that?
Well, so Bo, what, have you ever gone back and talked to that second grade teacher?
I have not.
Interesting.
But he's in my first book.
Yeah.
And it was, and I think where you're getting at, it was really a gift when I look back at it.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah.
It was really a gift. It took years to realize that, hey, there is not something wrong with me, that I can do it.
Yeah.
He may, if we talk to him, say I should have said it maybe a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So I'm going to let Jeff jump into some of the Q&A here on your career, but I got to ask you early on here in the podcast to tell us about, I think there's a story there related to rafting.
Yes. Do you want me to jump in there?
Please. Please. Okay.
So this will tie back into kind of my faith journey. So for those adventurers that are listening, looking for something cool to do, there's a canoe race in Belize. So the country of Belize, it's the oldest canoe race in the history of the world. And it's called the La Ruta Maya canoe race, or the La Ruta Maya experience. And what's fun, remember, so Belize and a canoe, so that I think there's t-shirts that say, can you Belize it? Yeah. So you can have a lot of fun, like, oh, you're going to Belize? I don't Belize it. So there is, you know, roughly call it 300 boats, 400 boats, and then there's a group of professional racers, and then there's kind of your recreational group. So it's about a 190-mile canoe race, roughly. And, you know, it takes, wow, takes about 4 days. So you race for a day, kind of like Tour de France. You go 8 to 12 hours, stop, camp, get to know the locals in that area. There's a lot of tradition there. So they really incorporate the culture. So speeding up to, I think it was day two, you know, we put our boat and we weren't, you know, experienced, you know, oarsmen, you know, or canoe experts by any means. Okay. So we get in the river. And they're like, hey, right out of the gate, there's a big drop, you know, like a 6 to 8 foot drop. So you got to lean back. They're kind of coaching you how to do it. And there's a choke. The river comes to a choke. And there's this huge canyon wall on one side. And then there's a bunch of like fallen trees on the other side. And it's just a little narrow gap. And it's a 6 foot drop. And you got to hit it just right. So we kind of, you know, all the pros take off, and then now it's the next phase, the 300 boats that are all struggling to try to you know, do as best they can. So we realize we just see people's heads. So we're in the water. There's all these boats, and we're trying to line up one by one to do it. And we just see boat after boat going over the falls, and then you can't see them. And then they go, float a little further down, and then you just see people swimming. So then you're like, you know. About every other boat is tipping over. You're like, guys, let's really think about this. Let's pull it back here. Okay. So as we kind of move off to the side and just reassess, hey, what is our, let's talk about our game plan one more time. You know, hearts are beating. We started drifting over to those fallen trees that I mentioned. And the next thing you know, we try to get back into the chute and we can't. The current has taken us. And the canoe butts up against this first tree. And when I mean a tree, like you could almost, it feels like you could have driven a car through the trunk. It was so big. But again, they're falling over. And I just remember the canoe just went, it just sucked underneath our feet. And I was like, oh my gosh, if, and I grabbed the tree, the bark of the tree with my hands. And the current, the water is overflowing my head. I have a little blowhole here. And I'm like, if I let go, I'm going to get sucked under wherever the canoe just went. And I'm going to get caught up in branches and I'm going to die. And I just gripped onto the tree bark with my fingertips as hard as I possibly could. And I just, it's just like the movies, right? Where you start to lose the grip and, you know, like a finger goes off, pink, pink, pink. And I was like, oh man, I get it. And then I released and my face you know, as I slid underneath the log, my, I just remember the tree bark, like, just scraping. It felt like it scraped the skin off my jaw. And I get sucked under, and I'm hitting tree branches, bang, underneath the water. And all of a sudden, I'm pinned. And I'm pinned with this unbelievable force. And I said, this is it. I mean, this was my fear. I cannot move. Tried as hard as I could to move, I could not move. And, you know, I'm just sitting there, and I'm just about to run out of air. I'm just about to inhale, you know, water. I mean, that's where I was. Like, I just, like, I got to take a breath, but I'm pinned. And then I just said, well, I surrender. And I just kind of relaxed. And all of a sudden, boom, I just got spit out. Okay. Hard to, and I popped up, you know, I had a little tiny blowhole. I went super fast underwater in the current. And I popped up in this little tiny blowhole, took a huge breath, and then the current sucked me back under again. And then I popped up again, grabbed some tree branches, and I just was like, breathe, you know, oh my, I can't believe what just happened. Like, I'm breathing, and there's alligators in the water, right? So now I'm thinking, you know, is an alligator going to come get me? And I look back, can't see my buddies, and all of a sudden one of them pops up. And just screams, hell. And he grabs some branches. And then another. And then finally, my third buddy pops up. And here's the thing. As we all took stock, we were far apart. You know, we were probably from one side to the other. We were 150 yards apart.
Wow.
But I remember looking down, you guys. And I said, where's my life jacket? My life jacket was gone. Okay. I had it. We all had our life jackets on. Okay. Mine was gone. And I didn't take it off. So my, you know, the hand of God saved my life. Mm. And it was at a point in my life where I was at a lower point with my faith, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. The Lord saved my life. My life jacket disappeared. Mm. Our canoe was never found. Okay. And we had to get rescued, you know, and they had to find us a new canoe. Is a whole story.
Wow. So, when you said I surrender, there's kind of two ways that I think about that. Was it I give up, or was it, okay, was that more of a prayer? Or was it, I mean, how do you think about that? Or is that even an important part story?
It probably was all the above, you know, in that
nanosecond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah. Yeah. I surrender.
But you did have the recognition later that it's like, okay. It was not the life jacket that saved you. That's what became obvious, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, it really reminds me of that quote that Claire was talking about, Jeff, the other day when he said he got the end of his rope, and he said, he looked up and said, God, I give up. And God just kind of smiled and looked down and said, okay, good. Now we can get to work.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. That seems like that. Yeah. Well, okay, let's keep going. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I was just, so there, I mean, clearly, so I, as an avid indoorsman, I'm fascinated by your outdoor adventures, which is clearly something that's super important to you. And you can do as you wish to tie in the career with all of that. But clearly, those things are related. Talk about what was the inspiration for you? Hey, I grew up in the Midwest. I'm still living in flat Houston. Okay. I didn't choose to go to the mountains. You got like 2 feet of snow behind you in Colorado now. How does a Midwest kid end up with a passion for the mountains?
I was lucky enough to, twice when I was a kid, my dad took us out west to go skiing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And I remember, you know, the first place we went to was Big Sky, Montana.
Mm.
And I had, you know, you'd seen as a kid, right? You'd seen some movies or mountains in movies or, you know, in books. But when we came in to land and I was looking out the window and saw the mountains for the first time, I mean, it was an immediate attraction. And and we landed. I just couldn't. I ran at the airport. I just ran to go look at them. And I just kept staring at them. And I noticed the houses. And I would say to my dad, I think I was 10 or 11 at the time, Dad, there's houses here. People live here. What do they do?
You don't have to live.
Yeah.
There's houses here.
Yeah. And he describes it like I just was asking, you know, thousands of questions in that kind of 5 days that we were there.
Right.
And skied from sun up to sundown. And he said to me, well, the best way to go and try out if you like the mountains is to go to college.
Okay.
Go to college there.
Yeah.
So I went to undergrad at Colorado State University.
Yeah.
And when I landed in Fort Collins, Colorado, within 24 hours, I had already climbed two mountains.
Wow.
I was addicted to it. And if I was at the library studying, you know, and there was a window and I'd look out and see a mountain, I'd be like, I would just leave, right? So I had to find places to study with no windows. So there's a good story there. But
well, you've got a lot more hair than I have. And I've only written one book and you've written four. So tell us about this passion for sort of combining this love of the outdoors with writing and the way you want to speak to people and that kind of thing. Where do those passions sort of converge?
So to share vulnerability with you and the audience here is the first book is about climbing the seven summits.
Right.
So there's seven continents on the earth and I've climbed the tallest mountain on each continent. And the very first one I did was Kilimanjaro. Okay. So I was working at JP Morgan in New York City, doing mergers and acquisitions, you know, working 100 hours a week, gained 50. And I went into my boss's office and I said, hey, I want to take my first vacation. I want to go climb Kilimanjaro. I've worked 7 months straight, includes Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't think I'd ever left the office before 11 p.m. And I said, the financial analysts were starting to take vacation at this time. And I said, hey, I want to go climb Kilimanjaro. And he looked at me. He looked down at my big belly. He looked at me. He looked at my belly. And he goes, well, Bo, what makes you think you're going to make it? And I was kind of like covering up my belly. And I, you know, and I said, I don't know. I'm kind of determined. And he goes, well, I know you don't have that much time to train. And then he said, hey, do you want to learn something? You know? And I said, yeah. He goes, you want a piece of wisdom? I said, yeah. He said, do you want? And he goes, this is going to give you more energy than you could possibly imagine. Like, what is it? He said, you know, you just talked about doing Kilimanjaro for yourself. If you climb Kilimanjaro for something bigger than yourself, okay, you're going to have more energy than you could possibly imagine. And it's going to take you on this, it'll take you on a journey.
Mm.
I didn't know what he meant. He goes, so think about that, you know, get out of my office and come back in a couple of weeks. So I did. So I came back and I realized, hey, I wanted to set up these educational scholarships for each climb, right? So for Africa. So just to fast forward, so I found the organization and I figured out that JP Morgan liked this nonprofit. And this nonprofit was really good at going into shanty towns in Africa, testing kids for aptitude and saying, okay, hey, this, you know, let's put them on a path. And I was like, well, Africa, what do they really need? They need more doctors. They need more doctors to save lives. So I'm going to create an educational scholarship. I'm going to create one doctor. So I told him this. He goes, this is great. And I found that, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, here's the picture. You know, I found this kid. Here it is. And he looked at me. He goes, well, aren't you going to do two doctors? And I was like, yeah. I think he was into it. I was like, yeah, let's do two. You know, I had only thought about one. He goes, and he said, it's $6,000, right? $6,000 for medical school. That's what it cost back then.
Hmm.
He opened up his drawer, wrote a check, gave me $6,000, and he said, now you have to now go raise another $6,000 and we'll do two doctors. And by the way, you should go talk to this person, this person, this person, tell them I told you. It was a little puny financial analyst. I got to go meet people all throughout the bank, way above my pay grade. They loved this story. I got put in the JP Morgan magazine, started giving speeches around the different bank. Went there. And now we've funded 10 doctors. And you guys, I keep track of the number of lives that we save.
Wow.
Every year I call the doctors. How many lives do you save this year? They've saved over 400,000 lives.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? And the goal now is 1 million.
So I think there's a real principle there that I don't want to go past is when your boss told you the way to find real passion and real determination and is make it about something other than yourself. And I think there's a real paradigm shift Talk about that a little bit more.
And it's biblical wisdom too.
Yeah.
You know, it's serve people that, you know, serve the poor, and it you know, fills your soul. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of the passage now, it'll come to me. So, and then these layers in life, like I started to realize you create these delicious layering, like mm-hmm. a delicious layering cake. So I had never, you know, so then I got to meet this amazing nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
okay, that I'm still in contact with today. And now I know the 10 doctors, one of them has passed away, those nine now, but these amazing doctors we've saved 400,000 lives. Then I joined the Explorers Club, which is an amazing global group filled with astronauts and anthropologists and botanists and biologists and explorers and mountain climbers that are doing amazing things. So I became a member of the Explorers Club. And then that kind of spawned into writing this first book. And I have to admit, when I had the idea of this for this first book, I was immediately thinking, oh, I'm going to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Okay. This is going to be great. This book's going to be a national, you know, global bestseller. And then one of my mentors told me, he said, Bo, let me just splash some cold water on you first. He goes, you know, you're lucky if five people read your book. And he goes, what you're writing the book for is your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Your kids read your book, because there's like a million books that get published today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he goes, but you're just, if you can change one person's life, mm-hmm. so that means one person reads it, you did it. But this dream, you know, that your book's going to go and, you know, is really unlikely. So that was a great reset for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now I'm writing the book just kind of for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you one cool thing that happened is, I did kind of say, well, I should do a little book tour. So I think I hit 10 cities and I went around and I would speak. And about 9 months or a year later, I get this email. And I get an email from a woman that says, you know, I heard you speak. She did not tell me, she did not say the city. And you're going to hear what, you're going to know why in a second. She goes, I heard you speak, and I heard you speak about change. And a lot of people get to the cliff of change, but they don't jump. And it's more painful to sit on the cliff of change. It's more painful to sit there than it is to actually jump and make that change you want to make. And I'm on a chair and I do this dramatic jump and everything. And she said, you know, I want you to know I jumped. And she said, you know, my story is, I'm trying not to get choked up here. She's been mentally and physically abused by her husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two broken arms. Broken jaw. I mean, she went into detail.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, I'm a nurse, but I've always wanted to be a doctor. But my husband said that I was too, you know, not smart enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I've left my husband. I've divorced him. I've moved, and I'm just starting medical school.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, I wrote the book for my kids and that woman, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's so many, we all know the media today. The media gets paid for clicks and selling ink and clicks. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't even, you know, there's a positivity versus negativity battle going on right now. So I always encourage people, tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more positive stories out there. Not to say we don't have to suppress the negative, just to be clear, because mm-hmm. we need to know, you know, things we need to fix, but we need to have more positive stories out there. So mm-hmm. I always encourage people, tell your story, write your book, because if you can change one person's life, it's worth it.
Love that story. And of course, that's what this podcast is all about, is kind of give an antidote to the pound your chest about your own personal business success for your own glory. So that just fits so perfectly. What is
And on that note, sorry to jump in, Lloyd Reeb, everybody. Lloyd Reeb, who wrote an amazing book called Success to Significance. Check it out. He's a mentor and a coach of mine. And he said, and I always kind of like, do I really have to share strengths? And, you know, I don't want to seem like I'm kind of boasting about much. And he goes, no, Bo, he goes, strengths are for service and not status.
Mm.
And that's the wisdom there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, all of us on this call, all the listeners that are listening, you have strength. Mm-hmm. Strength is for service.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the string is through all your books that you kept doing it? So is there a common string, you think?
I think the common strain, there's a few of them, but is focused, you know, doing something that's bigger than yourself, having a growth mindset, mm-hmm. right? Always learning.
Mm-hmm.
The third is, you know, humble, being humble. And, you know, and if you dig, if you read between the lines, I'd say the fourth one is faith, is my faith.
Mm-hmm. And I talk to a lot of young professionals, okay? And I came out of the big banks where you started. I spent 25 years at those big places, Payne Weber, 8 years, 17 years at Morgan Stanley. It's interesting to hear you tell a story of a person at one of those big institutions that was encouraging to you, actually helped you along the way. Can happen. For others, that doesn't happen. What was that career transition? We've had Don Winter on, so we kind of have the DLP story. But yep. From your perspective, what was it like? What was that journey like from a large financial institution in New York? Clearly, that's not what you're in today. It's a wonderful institution, but it's a far cry. And you're not living in New York. You're living in Colorado. That is also a far cry. Talk about literally and figuratively and topographically. But was it important for you to find a different kind of culture eventually? And you go to grad school at these wonderful places. And obviously, you can kind of go anywhere, do whatever you want. I just want you to talk about did you seek out a culture that would sort of allow you to be your full self? What was that journey like?
So the two most important moments of your life are, number one, the moment you're born, and number two, the moment you know why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are on a journey to figure out their why. And by the way, you can have more than one why, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you can add whys as you grow older. So what I was looking for at that time, I had this Wall Street experience. I was an entrepreneur, right? So I had classic entrepreneur. Some of my businesses did great. Some went horribly wrong. And I was just looking for more meaning in my life. And when I took a step back and my wife, it was one of those conversations where my wife and I had a really deep conversation. I let my guard down and I could hear everything she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, you need to find a company that, you know, has the same values as you do, and that's really doing something cool. So I wrote down these values and kind of what I was looking for on a piece of paper, and I prayed on it. And a month later, I heard Don Winter speak at a family office conference in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I went to the website, to DLP's website. Man, these are the same values I just wrote down, you know, the same piece of paper. I said, gosh, mm-hmm. they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, so before DLP, I was really just making a living, but now I'm making a life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that we're focused on, you know, the attainable workforce housing crisis in America. So we are trying to solve that crisis. And it's really, and you can, so what an impact company is, for those that don't know that are listening, an impact company simply means you can solve a problem in the world and make a financial return at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, having your cake and eat it too, in my book. So mm-hmm. I'm thrilled to be one of the many team members at DLP. And for me, that's just where my calling is.
So I've got a shout out to my friend Mike Moore, who invites me often to speak to young professionals. He's got a group under the Crew umbrella, but it's to young professionals. And he always has experienced business people come in and give advice to these young professionals. You know, they're usually in their 20s, maybe early 30s. You know, that maybe they got the graduate degree, or they're bootstrapping it and they're working hard, and I think there's a temptation to just take the job with the biggest pay, with the biggest prestige, that'll give them the next step. And what would your advice be for that young professional that is trying to kind of make that next step, to have something more meaningful is going on in their brain, and it doesn't necessarily match the culture, but I think they're maybe fearful? What advice would you give them about the possibility of finding a different kind of culture, or where to go next?
It's a really good question. I would say, if somebody, it's different for different, but different answers for different people. But I would say, for people that want to get some technical expertise, you know, some really good skill set. Like I worked at JP Morgan, right? I was in New York. So those 3 years that I was in New York City doing finance, I really learned a lot.
Yeah.
And that was an invaluable, like, I still to this day am like a super fast worker. I just get stuff done pass. It's almost like going to the Army and like boot camp, right? Like you just that training, like I highly recommend, and it doesn't have to be JP Morgan. It could be the Army, right? It could be other programs.
Yeah.
But that getting that skill set where you really learn how to prioritize.
Almost like boot camp. I mean, yeah. I did it in public accounting. Yeah.
It's really important to get that foundation.
Yeah.
Okay. And sometimes those places don't have the best cultures.
Right.
So you kind of have to if you can find one that does, hey, I think that go right. for it. But just knowing, hey, I'm going to have to take one for the team. And then there's a couple ways to do it. I would say, you know, like the Warren Buffett model is he's just focused on alpha, right? That's his zone of genius. Hey, look, he wants to make as much money as he can. But guess what? He's giving most of it to the Gates Foundation
right.
to do good work. So that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is someone that, say, works at a nonprofit, right? They work at a nonprofit. Their whole portfolio is invested in philanthropy or impact investing. And then there's a bunch of things in between. But I would definitely say, here's a cool tip that I would say. You know, some people always wonder, like, why does that person, they seem to have the magic touch. You know, why is that person getting promoted? Or why are they just seem like they're always happy and they're just doing cool stuff. Like, what is it? And there's two things I just want to share really quickly. That there's a lot more than two, by the way, but just two that come to mind. So one of them is, and this is they did this really cool study. I think it was in the 60s or 70s. And they took a large group of people and they split them in half. And they primed 50% of the people for positivity. And then they primed the other 50% for negativity. Okay? So they primed them. And then they showed them a piece of paper. And a picture, and the pictures had risks on it. And they said, point out the risks. Okay. So they did this whole exercise, and how it ended was the people that were primed for positivity, 100% of them observed all the risks. Okay. The people that were primed for negativity, they only saw about half the risks. They literally missed half the risks. Okay. And then, okay. So if you think about having a real chemical advantage, kind of in over the competition or in life, like if you're just generally a more joyful person, you're just going to see more and not be as myopic. Mm. They did the same study with people, same thing, primed for negativity, positivity, and then they injected people with a virus, like a cold virus. And then I don't think I would have signed up for that one. And the same, but people that were primed for positivity, some people didn't get sick at all. Or if they did get sick, the symptoms were really mild and they were sick about half as long.
Wow.
Yeah, where the other people stayed. So that is an advantage. That's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean, by the way, that you have to go around and pretending you're happy, but just to having some type of a joyful practice that could be prayer for a lot of people. Maybe some people do prayer and meditation, but there's a great book called Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod that people could check out. So that is a major advantage for people that are listening to this. And then the last one I'll say is there's often a communication gap at work and at home, at family, with friends. There's communication gaps happening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time when there's a gap in communication, it's filled with negativity unconsciously.
Yeah.
And it just is. And maybe it's our ancient circuitry, right? Like the moment we let our guard down back in the day, right? That's when that saber-toothed tiger would kill you, right? So we're just like, we're always just kind of fearful a little
bit. Yeah.
Lack of
communication definitely leads to misunderstanding, which leads to mistrust, which leads to lack of respect. And there's just it starts down. So you talked about having a growth mindset and you talked about humility. Mm-hmm. Which I can tell just as the way you describe your journey, you definitely, you're just amazing. You should be proud of your humbleness. So Carol Dweck, by the way, wrote a book called Mindset, Growth Mindset versus Fixed Mindset. Recommend it highly. Patrick Lencioni talks about hungry, humble, smart, you know, with humility being just the most important and, you know, exemplified incredibly by our Savior Jesus Christ on the cross, and who had that balance of, you know, full authority, but and complete vulnerability and complete humbleness. But how would you, Bo, say you have kids? How do you transfer some of that mindset of that growth mindset and the humility and the gratefulness to both your coworkers, your peers in your sphere, and also to your kids?
That's a great good question. I want to say one quick thing for those people that are in the workforce world. I just thought of, and then I'll jump back and double click on the kids. I also think it's important to set big goals. And there's a great book called Chase the Lion by Mark Batterson. And if your goals don't scare you, then they're not big enough. So set big goals, everybody. So what I do for my kids, Lloyd Reeb helped me with this. And basically, here's the quick lesson. If we were all 100 years old and sitting on a park bench, and I said to you, you know, hey guys, your life turned out perfectly. You're 100. Cool. Tell me what happened. Give me some bullet points that would let me know that your life turned out perfectly. Well, most people say, hey, I had a great marriage. My kids are thriving. I was I lived a good, healthy life, and I gave back to the world, you know, and I had a great relationship with my Creator. Okay, cool. Great. The next question is, this is classic Lloyd Reeb. Show me your plan. Go ahead, print it out. Show me your plan for ensuring that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very few people have that plan written down. So I'm going to double click on the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So what Lloyd has helped me, and I'm an alumni of the Halftime Institute. I did the 100X program, everybody. So if you don't know what that is, check out the halftimeinstitute.org, I believe. So what I did is I created a list of all the things that I want my kids, I have two boys, 12 and 8, that I want to prepare them for adulthood. What are all the things they need to know? How do you change a tire? You know, how do you, you know, car care? How do you do your laundry, right? How do you balance a checkbook? How do you learn empathy? How do you learn how to listen well? You know, and they're both boys, right? How does a dad know, you know, show how to love a woman, love his wife? You know, how do you love, right? You can kind of see where I'm going, right? How do you negotiate?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I put this big list down. I mean, there must be 60 things on here, 70 things on here, and it's a 3-ring binder, and I'm looking for it because it's normally right here, but I have it upstairs. And then we co-learn these things together.
Mm-hmm.
95% of these things we're going to learn together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of time, you know, for the parents out there, they don't really want to hear the parent teaching, right? It's just it's hard when you're a parent. But to co-learn is a different story.
Mm-hmm.
And the masterclass, so masterclass.com, the masterclasses are wonderful. So we do this thing all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ways that I've tried to ensure humility, a growth mindset with my kids is this kind of 3-ring notebook, this plan.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. You mentioned, Jeff, if you don't mind, I'm going to read a quote from, you mentioned Chase the Lion, Mark Batterson. I got to read this because it ties in so much with the mentality, the heart of Bo, our guest today. And this is, I paraphrase some of his quote, but he says, stop pointing out problems, become part of the solution. Stop repeating the past, start creating the future. Face your fears, fight for your dreams, grab opportunity by the mane, and don't let go. Live like today is the first day and the last day of your life. Burn sinful bridges, blaze new trails. Live for the applause of nail-scarred hands. Don't let what's wrong with you keep you from worshiping what's right with God. Dare to fail. Dare to be different. Quit holding out. Quit holding back. Quit running away. Quit living like the purpose of life is to arrive safely at death. Run to the roar. Set God-sized goals. Pursue God-given passions. Go after a dream that is destined to fail without divine intervention.
There you have it.
That's just describes you, Bo.
Amen. So, Bo, as we wrap up here, you've given us all kinds of tips. This is kind of your superpower. But we always try to close with just, it could be a repeat of something you've already said or something new that just comes to mind right now. But What is just one practical tip for somebody behind you on this journey that, you know, this is the Generous Business Owner podcast. So somebody in business who kind of wants to integrate their faith with what they're doing day to day at work. What are just a practical tip or two?
I would say, I love this quote, and I don't know who said it, but there are two types of pain in the world. There's the pain of discipline and there's the pain of regret. Mm. And one of them weighs a lot more than the other.
Mm.
And I believe that a lot of people don't take that first step because they have this big dream. But, you know, practical piece of advice would be, hey, if you want to implement your faith into your work or into your home in a better way, is just start small. Just do one small thing and see what happens. And I talked before about adding those layering, yeah, you know, that delicious layering cake I talked about. And a lot of times for people, it could be reclaiming something from their childhood that for some reason got overlooked, or they, you know, someone talked them out of it. That's what I would say is reclaim. And maybe that's an activity where, hey, you love to cook. Great. Have some neighbors over.
Yeah. There's definitely a theme that runs through everything that you're saying. And I just keep coming back to your example of the cliff, you know, and probably being on the edge of the chair, uncomfortable. Yep. It's a lot easier just to jump and get it over with. And yeah, it's probably not as scary as you think. So just get started in doing whatever God's calling you to do, and he will guide you from there, sure. So, Bo, just can't thank you enough for being with us today. Thanks for sharing your wisdom.
Bo, thank you. If you have a video of that jumping off the chair, we're going to put that in. We're going to put a link to that in the show notes, along with a bunch of the other things that you referenced here, including the link to how to find your books.
And Lloyd Reeves has been on, and he had about, I think he had the longest show notes of anybody on the program with all of his links to resources. So if you need a good spreadsheet about how to behave, go check that one out. So thanks, everybody, for listening to this week's Generous Business Owner podcast. Check out our website, generousbusinessowner.com. Sign up for the newsletter. Check out YouTube. Subscribe. Share it with a friend. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Generous Business Owner podcast with Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt. Make sure to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. You can find the guest contact information in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.